The political situation in East Timor remains extremely tense following the swearing-in last week of a new coalition government headed by Prime Minister and former independence hero Xanana Gusmão. Violent protests were reported, mainly in the east of the island nation, by supporters of the former ruling party Fretlin, which won most seats in the June election but was excluded from the coalition government. Scores of homes have been burnt and buildings vandalised, including a Salesian convent, since the new government was appointed by President José Ramos Horta last Monday. The latest violence has raised fears of a return to the factional fighting which claimed the lives of more than 30 people and forced thousands more to flee their homes last year. About 3,000 international police and troops are currently in the impoverished nation to try and maintain order. Sister Susan Connolly is Assistant Director of the Mary MacKillop East Timor Institute, based in Sydney, Australia. She told my colleague Lydia O'Kane the international community, including the Catholic Church, must help the Timorese people as they struggle to overcome the current outbreak of violence, as well as the deep-seated wounds of the past.
It's a struggling nation, trying to come to grips with their own internal trauma from the civil war in 75 and the invasion by Indonesia and the complete lack of interest for the rest of the world, including the worldwide church, I must say, up until recent times. They've got dealing with all that, and then they've got the process of democracy that they're trying to deal with. The fact is, 71% of the people did not vote for the Fretlin Party. And unfortunately, it seems that the Fretlin Party and their supporters have not yet been able to come to terms with that loss of power. But of course, we are very concerned, and it's sad to see this. But I think that the world has got to stand behind this young nation. Look, if we don't get it right in Timor, there's not much hope for lots of other places.
You posed the question, what can the church do? What can we do for this nation? It must be something you're thinking about a lot within your own organisation.
We should give them all the assistance that they deserve. And the greatest assistance, I believe, is to the educational opportunities. We nations of the world should be lining up to say to the new government, what can we do to help your people to make up for the 500 years of total neglect, so that the people have got the ability then to put the democracy that they've fought and died for into operation. Now, really practical things like the whole middle management area is missing in Timor, because all the middle managers were Indonesians and they left, and you're left with this huge vacuum. So they've got a tremendously idealistic, but the practicality of it is missing in a lot of cases. And really, as far as the church is concerned, we in the church, you know, they're 93% Catholic there. We should be saying to them, what can we do? What can we do as a church to help your priests, who are all traumatised men, who bore a tremendous burden? We know some of these men. We had a priest living here with us, you know, for 3 months, a beautiful man, and it's such a struggle for him. He had a gun pulled at his head on Easter Sunday, 1999. They pulled the trigger and the gun didn't go off. Now, multiply that by goodness knows how many. And, of course, the burden that they've borne, these men, you know, with feeling so responsible for the peoples in their parish. So, I mean, I'm not talking about money so much. I mean, partly is about money. You need to have infrastructure, etc. But to be able to go to Timor, this is what people ought to do. Go to Timor, find out, and then in small groups or as parishes or whatever, get behind the parishes there that are all over the place and so full of people, and support the individual parishes in what they need to do. You'll find that every parish in Timor has about 10 churches. So there's huge amounts. The whole catechetical area. I know a priest who sometimes has four 400 people for baptism every week. How do you evangelize 400 people? Like, it's nearly impossible. But so we mustn't just say to them now, oh, Lord, you know, there's a few street fights and there's stone throwing. Oh, you know, you're hopeless. This is a signal. This is a cry for help. We, the world and the church, have got to get behind these people.
I suppose when you see this unrest, I suppose it triggers fears of an end to a kind of a fragile peace that has held out since mid-2006, you know, when you had this violent feuding between rival army. And it obviously people will look to that and go, gosh, are we seeing a return to this? Because obviously we don't want it.
Of course, the problem that you're talking about is the weakness of the institutions, the army, the police, the courts, the whole health system, the whole government system. You know, the last financial year, the government did not spend the whole budget, poor and all as it was, $147 million American dollars, and they didn't spend it because of the lack of know-how, basically. And it is up to us, to all people, regardless of religion, to get in and do what we can. And I'm really pleased our troops and they are there to help them on with it. But the people need to have ways, when things settle down, of learning about a democracy, the rights and responsibilities of living in a democracy, because the experience has been denied them and they're going to have to learn it on the run. And what we're seeing now is maybe a couple of mistakes they're making in the learning of that.
There's so much to do, and it's almost like you say, don't let the violence get in the way of moving forward to make it a better nation.
Yes, that's right. But I suppose it is about looking forward in that. But I also think that a lot of what's going on at the moment among these people, Xanana and Ramos Horta and Marie Alcatiri, and all those men who've come, who really 1975 men coming, a lot of this is about the past, the unaddressed past. I mean, there was a civil war in Timor in 1975, a two-week civil war, partly fomented by Indonesia, because they could see it coming and it was a way of coming in and saying, well, we're going to save you from yourselves. But it was a civil war, and about 1,500 Timorese were killed by other Timorese. Now, that has never been addressed. Families have never really had the chance because of what happened to them right at the end of the civil war, invaded by the fourth largest army in the world. And all that terrible trauma that they had for the next 24 years. And now the last 6 or 7 years getting on their feet with the democracy. The whole process of human understanding of reconciliation with someone who's wronged you, they really haven't been able to sit down and do that on a large scale. And that's a very important thing. There are a lot of people talking about that up there. There have been moves to capitalise on the existing community village type reconciliation process that has existed in Timor for hundreds of years. That has been used to a certain extent with people who committed lower order crimes, particularly recently. But as for really being able to say, look what happened to us, look what we did to each other, that has not happened. So it's seething underneath.
My thanks there to Sister Susan Connolly of the Mary MacKillop East Timor Institute, speaking to my colleague Lydia O'Kane.